Everyone has a story. I get them to tell it. Welcome to the Aaron Bender Podcast, conversations with media personalities about their personal and professional lives and journeys. Appreciate you finding the podcast. I invite you to subscribe, rate, and review, and share with your friends and family. The more people listening, the more stories I get to share. Before we get to my conversation with singer-songwriter Destiny Malibu, a little about my story. I'm a widowed dad of two girls who just lost their mom, a grieving husband, a man in recovery trying to reconnect with the world with fresh eyes, faith, and perspective, a college journalism professor, a white guy in a world of injustice, a 20-year broadcast media veteran who had his dream job, then lost it. A year and a half ago, God gave me a gift, an opportunity to stop, step back, and breathe so I could learn about love, vulnerability, forgiveness, grace, self-care, patience, and understanding. I first found Destiny Malibu on LinkedIn, of all places. As I started to reconnect with the world after my wife passed away, LinkedIn was actually the first social media I spent any kind of time on. And there she was, Destiny Malibu, singer-songwriter, and mental health advocate. That last part is what really caught my eye, that somebody would put so proudly in their title, mental health advocate. Loved that. So I reached out, and it's been such a treat to learn more about her and follow her these last few months. And it's cool that my girls can actually watch her videos and listen to her music. Our conversation starts in Las Vegas. Lo siento.
Kind of like a drastic move, but it's not that drastic because it's only like 4.5 hours from California, which is not too bad. I can still go see my friends and we can take my tour bus over there and come back, which is pretty cool. And we actually moved out here temporarily because, first of all, I'm working on some potential gigs that I'm excited about that I can't say yet, but you know, COVID kind of like put a stall and
put everything on hold, right?
So I'm still out here. We're still talking with some really cool people about upcoming events. And then, you know, I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but my house actually burned down in Malibu.
That's what I was getting at. So, I'm wondering if the move to Vegas had anything to do with that first half of November of 2018, the Woolsey fire.
Yes.
And we're going to get to the borderline shooting because your family has been touched by that as well. But let's stick with, at least for right now, that Woolsey fire. Where were you when you learned of the Woolsey fire, and how quickly did it make its way to your house?
Yeah, so it was a pretty crazy thing because the borderline shooting at the Bar and Grill in Thousand Oaks, and the Woolsey fire happened literally within like a 48-hour period.
Right, right.
So the night of the shooting, I was with some of my friends and I was in Calabasas and it was just crazy. My parents called me and they're like, hey, you know, there's an active shooter at Borderline Bar and Grill. We're all in panic mode. We all like, you know, are just freaking out. And then by the grace of God, my sister is okay. But literally the next day I had been at a friend's house. So the next day I was at home with my sister and we were exhausted from all of everything that had happened the night before. We hadn't slept at all. We went to a vigil right after the shooting had happened. It seemed like it was right after the next few hours for some people that had passed away. The community came together. We hadn't slept. I remember I was sitting in my sister's room and we had the news on. And we're like, okay, let's try to get some sleep, you know? And, you know, the news is like, oh, the fires are coming over the freeways. And we're like, oh my gosh, like, is the world literally
You're like,
ending?
Wait a minute, what fire, what freeway are you talking about us?
Exactly. Like, we're like, oh my gosh, like, what is going on? So we try to get some sleep and literally we must have slept maybe for, I don't know, 3-4 hours, maybe. And my parents came into my sister's room and woke us up and said, hey, we got to go right now, like we can literally see the fire coming at us, grab what you can, which we really didn't get to grab anything. And we took off down the mountain and literally like the flames were like burning the mountains as we're driving down. We get to PCH and literally it was bumper to bumper traffic. And that was really scary because we were on PCH trying to evacuate, I'd say for, I want to say like 8 hours. And we were literally not moving. And I remember we were just like, wow, literally the world is ending. And in Malibu, if you've been, I mean, I'm sure you know that there's areas on PCH, right? Where all those houses that are lined on the beach, mm-hmm. like there's sections where you have direct access to the beach, but then there's like sections where it's like all house.
Right.
And like, if there was an emergency, there's literally nowhere to go. Like, it's just like mountain and houses. And so we were like on the freeway, and I remember we were like, okay, well, literally the smoke was coming at us, and we're like, we literally might die right now. So that was really scary, to say the least. And I just remember we drove, you know, past the freeway, and I remember we just stopped in a random like gas station, and we were all so tired, like our adrenaline was completely taxed. And we just pulled into a gas station, and I remember us like all looking at each other and being like, whoa, like we have nowhere to go, you know, and just being like, just in shock and not sure what we were going to do next. So yeah. And then we were holding on to hope that our house was still there, but we also knew like, you know, odds are it's probably not. And it wasn't. So then we had this whole transition. We lived in LA for a little bit, and then we still have our property there, but it's an empty lot now.
Yeah.
We're going to rebuild, but the rebuilding process in Malibu takes a while. Only a couple people we know have gotten the permits to fully rebuild. Malibu is very strict on the rebuilding process. So yeah, we're working on that. I plan to go back, but right now I got a lot of great opportunities in Las Vegas and kind of just seeing, you know, seeing how the timeline adds up.
How long after the fire did you realize or learn that your house was one of those that burned down?
I want to say it was probably the next morning.
Oh, so not that long. It's not like many of the other homeowners who had to evacuate for days and days and days, only to right. then go back to the neighborhood and learn that their house was one of the ones that didn't yeah. survive.
We were really fortunate because we had a friend in the police force who was able to drive by and told us, hey, yeah, your house isn't there. But a lot of people did have to wait a really long time. And then when we were finally able to go up there, I remember my neighbors who are actually Howard Lees from the band Heart. I'm not sure if you're familiar.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I would babysit his kids all the time growing up there, you know, and I remember his kids were calling me and they're like, hey, like, did you find out like our house is still there? And we were able to get up there by some miracle and take a look. I believe it was a couple days later after we got the news, or was it the same day? Was it a month later that we got to go physically see? That's right. So we-
Is that mom over there? Is that mom's?
Yeah, that's mom.
Hi, mom.
Hi.
Girl, we're going to get to you later. I've got some questions about you and dad here in a minute here. Because you were partying in Hollywood about the same time I was. So we're going to get to you. We're going to get to you. Don't you worry about that, sister.
Yeah, so we got the news about the next morning that our house was gone. But we didn't get to physically go see our house and the property and see what it looked like till a month later. So
I remember
Howard's kids, they were like, oh, like, are you sure our house isn't there? And I remember I took a picture and we were all in such denial because we had lived there our whole lives. I took a picture and his house was gone. And he was like, are you sure? Like, maybe if you move a little to the left, or maybe you just aren't getting the right angle. And I'm like, no. Like,
right. Because after a wildfire, the neighborhood doesn't look the same. So
no,
the numbers are gone. The landmarks you've grown up with are gone. So of course he's going to question like, wait a minute. It's not like one of those renovation shows where they just take you back to the same address and you walk in and it's a completely new house. No,
right. The
address isn't even there.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, everything looked totally different. So an angle that would look familiar before now looked like you weren't even in the same place.
A moonscape.
So, yeah, exactly. So yeah, that was a rough time. That was definitely, I'd say, the most challenging thing I've ever experienced.
Yeah, November 7th of 2018 is when the Borderline shooting happened. And then within 24 to 48 hours, you have the Woolsey fire. So you have just from my standpoint, you had reporters who were covering the borderline shooting and thought, okay, I'm going to go home now and finally crash out. It's like, no, you're actually in the same area that this wildfire is starting. Just right. go cover that as best you can, and we'll send out reinforcements as soon as they become available because everybody is stretched so thin. Take me then to, even before the fire started, you're talking about you're holding your sister, you're holding each other, the family is coming together because your sister has survived the borderline shooting.
It was extremely traumatic. You know, I had been with my friends, and then, you know, I rushed over to see my sister, and then we were kind of just in shock. And, you know, thinking back, you know, even though the whole experience was the most challenging thing of my life, it definitely would have been way more challenging had my sister been one of the victims that passed away. There were 12 people that passed away, and it makes me emotional because one of the girls that we're friends with, her brother passed away and he charged the shooter, and it was her twin brother. And I think about every time I see her post about him, I'm like, oh, that could have been my sister. You know, it's very traumatic. So.
And she's your big sister, but it feels like a little bit that maybe you were the one comforting her.
You know, my sister is really strong. She's like the strongest like warrior I know. And even at the shooting, the way she told us the story was that it's actually crazy. So when the shooter came in, excuse me, she had said that, you know, they heard gunshots, and because it's a country bar and grill, they weren't sure like, hey, is this like a part of the song? You know, sometimes they have remixes and they have like gunshots in the song or something. And she said that everybody kind of looked around, was confused. And then she said they started hearing screaming, like, you know, shrieking. And then all of a sudden everybody just started running, you know, like herds of people just kind of like trampling over each other. And she had tripped. And she said that people were, you know, basically you know, walking over her per se. She's on the floor. People are trying to run out the door. And some angel, I don't think she even knows who it was to this day, right? Some guy picked her up and off the floor and carried her out the door, which is thank God for that man. And then my sister, when she got out the door, there she said that there was like maybe 4 kids that were noticeably younger than her that just immediately like were drawn to her because she has a very strong leader personality. And they were like, what do we do? And she's like, okay, come on guys, like follow me. So she said that like 5 kids, they're like crouching through the parking lot because, you know, they don't know if there's multiple shooters, if there's people outside, you right. know, just because you're outside doesn't necessarily mean that you're safe. There's still chaos going on everywhere. So she said that the kids started following her and they crawled up like the mountainside, and they were just like army crawling up the mountainside.
Oh my goodness.
And these like 4 or 5 kids were just following her. And then they just tried to hide on the mountainside where the bushes were until the cops arrived. But that to me is just a perfect example of her strength. You know, she was able to help those kids and they didn't know what to do. So, I mean, even though I definitely like to think that I'm there to comfort her, she is a strong girl. she doesn't really show her emotions. Definitely not as much as I do. So I'm like, Desiree, are you okay? She's like, yeah, I'm fine. I'm like, okay. Okay. Like I know she definitely gets emotional about it. But I really look up to her and admire her for that because she is so strong-willed and a leader like that.
And you turned your emotions into a song within days.
Yes, that one is actually called We Will Rise.
We Will Rise.
Some of the lyrics in that are from the ashes, We Will Rise. And yeah, so interesting story about that. So after everything had happened, my sister was like, man, like I wish there was a song that she was looking for songs that she could send to her friends to like, be like, this is our song. Like, we're united together, you know, we're going to be okay. And she's like, I can't find one. Like, I can't find one that feels like it fits what we went through. So I remember thinking about that. And I literally like sat down that night and I wrote the song, We Will Rise. And the song talks about the Woolsey fire and borderline.
Though it feels too real and my stomach is sick, I know who we are and I know what we
there's a lot of story in that song, and it talks about, I mentioned some of the things that my sister described to me from the event when she said that, you know, she fell on the floor, you know, when she was running out, you know, in the second verse of that song, I wrote, my bootstraps on the floor, you know, so there's things that are like really specific. And I wrote it with the intention of it being something inspirational. Like she said, I wanted it to be something that made us feel like we're going to get through this.
Panic from the noise. Windows breaking, hands are shaking. Adrenaline is pumping through my veins and I can barely see the door. My bootstraps on the floor. Ooh. Rips underneath the ground. Better to my feet. Everything I know straight from.
Where did your songwriting begin?
Well, I wrote my first song when I was about 9 years old, and it was the first song I'd ever written. And my mother was a professional musician, a singer. She was in a Latin girl group. So I like to say that I was kind of like born in the studio. Like my earliest memories are literally watching my mom, headphones on, you know, recording. And so I was fascinated by music and songwriting at a very early age. And then I remember I believe it was when I was nine, my mom showed me, hey, honey, like, you know, if you ever want to write a song, like this is the basic structure of a song. You know, you have your verse, you have your chorus, you have your second verse, sometimes you have a bridge. And I remember just like nine-year-old me looking at that paper and being like, I could do that. I could totally do that, you know, and just being fascinated.
Had you been writing poetry or anything like that to that point? And maybe she saw something like that in you, or was it maybe she was just trying to throw things at you to see what stuck?
Yeah, I mean, we had always been singing, you know, being around my mom growing up in church. So definitely I was always around music and always singing. And I did love writing, but I'm not sure really thinking back if there was something I'd written that sparked that. I mean, in my memories, I was just writing, you know, those classic like, Mom and Dad, I love you. Like simple things, you know what I mean? So I'm sure she wasn't like, oh my gosh, like right, gotta show her now. But when she did, I don't know, something just clicked in my brain. And ever since she showed me that, from that moment on, like every time I listened to other songs, it's like my brain was like analyzing the structure. Like, oh, like that's a really good hook. Oh, that's a really good chorus. That's a really good verse. And I just fell in love with it. So at nine, with that concept in my mind, I wrote my first song and it's called A Million Kisses. And I actually do have a recording of it. And I'm actually really proud of the song. To be honest, it's probably one of my favorite songs I've ever written. And maybe I'll send it to you so that way you can check it out. I mean, I sound like a total little baby, but I'm like, wow, like,
there's no really sending cool. it to me to check it out. They're sending it to me so I can include it right now in the podcast.
Yes. Do you want me to send it to you
Absolutely,
now?
Absolutely, yes. If somebody is looking at you, they're like, wait a minute. Okay. Destiny Malibu, total, you know, like pop star, English pop star, English only. But no, you speak Spanish. You sing in Spanish. One of your hit songs, best songs is Lo Siento. What is your background and how important was it to you to include that side of your family, that side of your background and culture in your music?
Very, very exciting time. And it's so cool because when I look at my mom's old, you know, vinyl records and, you know, see her performances and, you know, they had a number one hit called Las Maracas, and just seeing videos of her perform and listening to her music, it is so cool. And I know it's really special for her too. Like sometimes, like when she'll watch my Lo Siento video or Vamos, she'll be like, wow, like you look just like me, you know, when I was your age. And it's crazy because we do look a lot alike. And it's really cool to honor my mom in that way and to honor my heritage. And I'm half Latina and I'm half Swedish. So kind of polar opposites.
Oh, wow. Yeah. My wife was Filipino and Swedish.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a great combo. It's a great combo. Yeah.
I'm sure. Polar opposites of family gatherings, you know, totally different vibes, but I love them both. And it's just been really, really cool to get to show my Latina side. Also being from Malibu, you know, it's cool to showcase that heritage because, you know, some people wouldn't think that I speak Spanish because like you said, like it's Destiny Malibu, but it's really cool to highlight that about my upbringing.
Where did you get the name? How did you come up with the name?
Yeah, so my real name is Destiny. That's my birth name. And then Malibu just came about basically because I used to go by Destiny just on its own, but it became really difficult to brand it because, you know, you search Destiny, there's the video game, there's, you know, all these different search results. So yes. At the time I was 17 when I came out with my first few songs and people were like, oh, I'm having a hard time finding it. So we sat down with management and we said, okay, like what can we add to your name to like, you know, make it unique and searchable. And we went over all these different ideas.
I got to hear some ideas. I got to hear the rejected names. I beg of you, let's go.
We had a list of ideas. Like, you know, we thought like Destiny Rain, Destiny, what was it?
Rocks.
Yeah. Destiny Rocks.
Destiny Rocks.
Destiny. That's hilarious. Destiny Rocks, but it was ROX. I'm like, that's kind of cool. Thinking back, I'm like, thank God I didn't do that because it sounds like I'm 16 years old. But yeah, we had some interesting ones. And I remember going about it, the management was coming up with, you know, oh, we could, you know, Destiny, what was another one? Destiny Rose. You know, there's all these different ideas we were coming up with. And they were cool, but none of them felt like me. Like none of them like rang true where it's like,
right.
It just doesn't feel like something I would feel be like, oh yeah, my name's Destiny Rose or something, you know, like it just didn't feel natural. And then one day I was at a party and I was exchanging info with some friends that I had met. And then I was like, they're like, oh, where are you from? And I'm like, oh, I'm from Malibu. And I'm like, I'll just save my number in your phone as Destiny Malibu because that's where I'm from. And then it was just so funny. So I remember it was like a light bulb because we had been having these conversations with everybody. And they're like, oh yeah, that's cool. And I was like, that's it.
It just clicked.
It just clicked. And I went home. I told my management, I'm like, I don't care what anybody says. This is it. It feels like so right. It feels so right. And it's cool because I get to honor where I grew up. I mean, all of my memories, my childhood memories are in Malibu. So It's I'm really happy that we decided on that.
We go back to your mom in the music industry. Do you feel any pressure because you come from this music family?
You know, I don't feel pressure in the sense that I feel more really blessed considering that I have a mentor like my mom and I've had a mentor. I think that in many ways I've learned so much from her, like how to have stage presence, you know, the do's and don'ts and interacting with the crowd and doing, you know, interviews and stuff like that, where it was my mom who was giving me all this information, who really had experience, who had been on TV shows, who played to auditoriums with 50,000 people, you know, so who better to teach me than my mom? So I'm really, really thankful for that. And my parents are really supportive in the idea that success is really based on how you view success, you know? And even if my career were to stop tomorrow, which I don't think it will, God willing it will, but even if it did, I'm so proud of everything I've done. And my family is really not big on comparison. I don't like look at what my mom did and go, oh, I haven't had a number one hit yet, I failed. No, like, you know, we look at things like, wow, like I got to be on American Idol, you know, I didn't win, but I got that experience. I got to tour, you know, I got to visit colleges. I got to meet Katy Perry and Lionel Richie and perform with Earth, Wind and Fire. And, you know, I just think about those highlights. And to me, being successful doesn't necessarily mean you have to be the number one artist in the world. It's, are you getting to do what you love? And do you have those memories? And I definitely feel really proud of what we've worked so hard for at this point. And I feel like there's some really, really, God willing, awesome, awesome things coming next. So I'm really excited for the next phase too.
Is she okay being called a momager?
Yes, I actually got her. I don't know if you've heard of it, but they're called pop sockets. They like stick on the back of your phone.
And oh, it's yes.
Like, so you can hold your phone. Actually, a kid from my high school invented those. Brian Spunt, he's awesome. But I got her a pop socket that says momager and she rocks it.
I wanted to make sure of that before I ask my next question, which is the idea that momagers have this
stigma.
Little stigma. Yes, thank you. Yeah. Hard driving, don't care about what the kid wants. How is it working with mom? And is this your dream or is this her making sure that her dreams continue?
I think a lot of people in the music, it's a tough business, you know, and of course you always hear different opinions and people say different things. I've definitely heard people say, oh, like, you know, eventually you're not going to want to have your mom as your manager. And, you know, like people talking in my ear and saying stuff like that. And,
right.
you know, sometimes people, I feel, don't give her the respect that she deserves because they're like, oh, you're the mom. Yeah, mom. You know what I mean? And, you know, that honestly, like, bothers me a little bit because my mom, you know, is no offense to any of the momagers out there who weren't in the business, but my mom really, like, you know, had that hands-on experience. I mean, she did all of the things that I look forward to doing more of, you know, those 50,000 person arenas and all of that stuff. So I respect her so much. And to be honest, it's like, it's so cool. Of course, we've had our ups and downs, you know, especially when I was younger, you know, and
you're still a teenager. It doesn't matter. You're still a rebellious teenager.
Yeah. And especially, you know, when you're younger, especially being a creative, I'm much better at the creative side than I am at the business side. 1,000 times better at the creative side. So, you know, sometimes you got to whip me into shape a little bit. but overall, it's really, really cool to work with her. And what I take away from it is, you know, eventually, you know, we're going to, I'm sure, add more people to the team and whatnot, but I would never take away all of the work that my mom has put in and my whole team has put in. I mean, we've been working really hard for years to get to where we are right now. And, you know, I think she deserves so much of the credit for all the hours that she's put in.
All right. So here's the thing, mom, I know you're over there. You and your husband met at Avalon in Hollywood.
Aaron, by the way, my yes. husband is a huge fan of yours.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, that's so cool.
And he's
thank
like,
you.
Oh, my goodness.
Tell him I said hi. What's his name?
I will. Eric.
Eric, hello. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for all the support over the years. Thank you, Eric. I appreciate that.
He was so excited. He's like, Aaron wants to interview you. Oh, my gosh. I listen to him all the time.
That's so cool. Thank you. So when did you meet Eric?
Let's see. We met. I was actually on vacation from touring for Christmas. And that was December 5th. 1987.
Okay, 87. All right, okay. So there was not a chance then that you and I partied together. There was not a chance. Because when I read that you had met at the Avalon in Hollywood, I might have danced next to them. I don't know. Because I was Avalon, I was Florentine Gardens, I was the Palace.
Yeah.
95 to 01 was okay. like
so
my...
I'm older than you. You're a baby.
That was my sweet spot right there. Yeah, so I was just wondering, that's all. But oh yeah, no, the Palace, Florentine Gardens, there's one more arena. Arena. Oh.
Can you go to the 3-2-1 club?
The 3-2-1? I don't remember the 3-2-1.
Santa Monica. And he grew up in Redondo Beach.
See, I grew up in Covina, so it was already a trek just to get to Hollywood. When I read that, I'm like, I totally could have partied with Destiny's mom. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh.
That's so sweet. You want to know something really cool, Aaron?
Yeah.
So my parents met at the Avalon, right? And when I was 17 and I released my first two songs, my first two music videos, the second music video that I released, we shot at the Avalon. And it was like my first time, like, really putting out music videos. And I remember my parents were like, wow, this is weird. Like, we met here fast forward, we're watching them film you for your first music video. So we really love the Avalon.
Walk me through that process, because, for example, like, I love audio. I love audio. I love editing. Yeah. I love producing and creating. I'm only now starting to think about video because I'm trying to do like promotions and things like that. Walk me through that process for you, because as a singer-songwriter, that's your first love. Yes. And it's like, oh, but okay, I've got to start thinking visually now.
Yes. So that is definitely a whole nother hurdle in itself, or it can be depending on how you look at it, you know, because like you said, first love being music, you're not initially thinking, oh yeah, I'm going to be, you know, on camera all the time. And when I was younger, it took me a minute to get used to, you know, especially when you're young and you're insecure and you're like, oh, like I'm going to be on camera. I don't know if I look as cute as I want to look and whatever. But now that I'm in my 20s, I mean, I have become very, very comfortable with being on camera and, you know, going through that journey of self-love and accepting, you know, doing my best and all of that good stuff, you know, that takes years of figuring out. But when I was younger shooting music videos, I shot my first two in Malibu, and I actually shot one of them at James Burnett's house. I'm not sure if you're familiar. His dad is Mark Burnett, and they do like voice and stuff. And that was so, so cool of them. I was working with James because
Wasn't he one of your first producers?
Well, yeah. So I was working with him as a songwriter for his company, Burnett Music Group. So like fresh out of high school, he signed me to his
senior year. You were in high school.
Oh, it was my senior year. Yeah. So it was my senior year. My mom's clarifying my memories. It was my senior year. And he signed me to his brand new company, Burnett Music Group, as his first songwriter on board. And he had seen me enter like all of the school competitions. And I was very active in all of the music in my high school. I was actually so honored that I was voted most musical my senior year.
Oh, wow.
Crazy, because literally like Malibu is a very,
I was going to say, you get any high school in Malibu or Calabasas, or, you know, you go into Hollywood or anywhere on the West Side, being voted most anything artistic is a huge accomplishment.
I was really happy because there's so much talent there. I mean, you know, a lot of being Malibu, a lot of their parents are musicians or actors, actresses. So, and I was on independent study because I was working on songwriting. So I remember I came back to school and they're like, oh yeah, like you won most musical. I was like, you're joking. I was so happy. So yeah. So James, you know, he signed me to his songwriting company, Burnett Music Group. And so I was able to film my first music video at their house in Malibu, and that's my music video Time. And yeah, it was definitely, I remember back then, it was really intimidating because, you know, we had the red cameras and we had these crazy lights. And I remember being like, oh my gosh, like, you know, you just go from being on a microphone to being like full on like 20 cameras in your face. You're like, oh, okay.
When you went into it, how long did you think it would take, and how long did it end up taking?
The shooting the music video. Right. So Time and I Feel Alive is the one we shot at Avalon. They're like a two-part story. So Time is part one and I Feel Alive is part two. And to be honest, we filmed them relatively quickly because, of course, you know, we don't have a huge, huge budget, you know, we're trying, and the longer you take to film, the more you're going to spend. So we tried to shoot it in, I'd say, a 4-day period. So we literally shot two music videos in a 4-day period with a storyline, and it was crazy.
I expected you to tell me, like, I thought we'd be there for 2 days. We ended up being there for 2 weeks because this or that. Yeah. But to get two videos done in 4 days is unheard of.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. And yeah, I'm really proud of those. It's a really cool memory. And nowadays I work with a fabulous team of directors, and their names are Mikey and Jala, Talk Boy and Talk Girl TV. And I have such a great relationship with them. I shot all the music videos with them for my last album, Sweet Persuasion. And it was 7 music videos. So yeah, it was a very, very busy year. And I'm so proud of that work. And, you know, just seeing the growth, because it's funny, when I watched the music videos when I was 17, I've grown so much, you know, now in my 20s, to be, you know, watch them back. And it's a process, man. I mean, it really is. It's a process.
As a young woman in this day and age, you know, of course, image is so much a part of performing, body image and self-love. And at what point are you like, you know what, I'm me, take it or leave it? Where does the pendulum swing when you kind of have those, quote, bad days? And right. how do you manage that?
Yeah, well, you know, I'm also a mental health advocate, and I have a whole album dedicated to mental health. It's called Out of the Shadows. And I talk with kids about mental health. And of course, you know, self-image and self-love is a huge, huge, huge part of mental health. And for me personally, it definitely took me a long time to really be like able to like look in the mirror and be like, I accept myself, flaws and all. I know I'm doing the best I can. I'll look in the mirror and be like, I love you. You got this, you know, and you do those affirmations and everything. But it definitely wasn't like an overnight thing. You know, my sister is so funny because going back to my sister being super confident and me always admiring her for that, I'd be like, oh, like, I just don't look cute today. Like thinking back when I was younger, I'd say stuff like that. Like, oh, I don't look cute, something. And she'd be like, I'm going to smack you. Don't say things like that. You know, but like, she would give me that tough love. And, you know, I always learned from her because she didn't care about, you know, what she looked like. She was like, I'm awesome. Let's go. And it took me a long time to learn that skill. And, you know, definitely today, I think the number one thing is, you know, the concept of change what you can't accept and accept what you can't change, you know? So, you know, I do my best to eat healthy. I do my best. Like, I really love fashion. I enjoy, you know, doing quirky hairstyles and doing different things. But at the end of the day, I know that that's all exterior. And the most important thing is like how I feel inside. And every single day, you know, I make an effort to, you know, tell myself affirmations and highlight my strengths, you know, and not dwell too much on, you know, my weaknesses. But it's a tough industry. I mean, you really have to have thick skin. I mean, even when I go on my live streams, you know, there'll be people like, oh, you have a really big nose, or, you know, they'll say things where if you let those things get in your head, I mean, it can literally drive you insane. So I think that the number one thing is just knowing that everybody is going to have an opinion of what you look like. Beauty is completely subjective. I mean, you could show one person three different people and they could have totally different opinions on if they're attractive or not, you know? So I just, you know, keep in mind that everybody has an opinion. Everyone is welcome and allowed to express those opinions, but I get to decide how much I take them in, you know? And that was a skill that took me a really long time to learn. And nowadays I'm like, okay, you don't like me. That's fine. I like me. It's good enough for me. So thank you. You
know? Let's talk about those Instagram lives. You do them every weeknight at 8:00. When and how did that start? That's admirable for anybody who does even a weekly live, let alone a nightly IG live.
Yeah. So I started doing the daily IG live streams Monday through Friday, 8 p.m. to 9 p.m. Pacific time. I started doing them, I want to say, in the beginning of this year. And my goal is to do them all year long. I mean, it was kind of like this grand idea. We came together with my management team because, you know, COVID's going on. Venues weren't opening up. I mean, in many areas, like I just saw on Clubhouse, someone talking about, you know, in Canada, they're not looking to reopen festivals anytime soon. So, you know, you kind of have, as an artist, have to start being like, okay, well, how do I creatively now work in this market? Because you can't be in person. So I said, you know what, for right now, let's just do a daily live stream. Let's just try it. I'd never really done live streaming before. And I actually feel like it's been such a great, great thing for my audience because, you know, seeing somebody's face or seeing them dance in a music video or even hearing them sing, you know, sometimes is not as personable as really like being on live. You're reading their comments. They get to see your personality. And I really think that it's really been one of the best things I've ever done in the last few months because, you know, we're building every week a bigger and bigger squad of people who, you know, will message me and be like, oh, I look forward to this every day. And that just like makes me so happy because I get to do what I love. I get to go in there and literally just sing music to people for an hour. I mean, right now it's free. We're not charging anything because I want it to be accessible. I know, especially during COVID, like so many people are hurting, you know, in the economy and jobs were lost. And so, and a lot of my angels, I like to call them my angel squad. A lot of them are really young, you know, some of them are like 14. So I want to make sure that they can watch and we can hang out, and it's a really good time. So I'm doing it Monday through Friday, 8 p.m. to 9 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on my Instagram.
Where'd you come up with the angel squad?
Yeah. So, you know, my first album that I released is called Kissed by an Angel. And I kind of have like an affinity with angels, and, you know, you see a lot of that in the music industry, you know, and I want my followers, fans, I want them to know that I view them as angels in my life. And I want them to take that positive concept of angel and give it back to the world. So that way when they're around other people, you know, my hope is that if I have any influence on them whatsoever, that it's to be kind and it's to give light back to people. So that's kind of why I call them that. And they like it.
The idea, let's go back to the idea that you have young girls on your IG Live watching you, looking up to you. There are many people in all kinds of industries who don't want to wear that role model hat.
Right.
Where do you come down on that?
You know, I feel really honored and privileged that anybody looks up to me at all. And, you know, I kind of think of it in a way where I don't think of it as like a pressure thing. I remind people all the time, I'm a mental health advocate. Like, I by no means am perfect. I am comfortable saying that, you know, a few years back, like I struggled with depression, you know, I'm vulnerable with my audience so they can see, you know, even though most people look at me and they're like, oh, you're bubbly. Like, I bet your life is perfect. You have no issues. Like, we're all human. You know what I mean? Like, we all have issues and we all have our struggles. And so if I can give anything back to my audience, it's just that, you know, I want them to remember to be a light in this world. There's so much, you know, darkness, you know, in so many different areas, even in the music industry. And so I make a really big effort every day to make my brand family friendly. You know, all of the messages that I push in my songs are for the most part encouraging. And that's really my goal, is just to uplift people, because I feel very blessed that I have such a great family support system. And, you know, sometimes when that's all you know, sometimes it's easy to forget that like everybody else has a totally different environment. I mean, some people's, you know, parents are really don't communicate with them, or, you know, they're living with their single mom or their single dad, or, you know, there's addiction in the family, or, you know, different things. That I feel so blessed that I've had an overall really healthy environment, that like, I want those kids, if any of them are in, you know, a difficult environment, my hope is that when they come on my live stream or they interact with me, that it brings them some happiness and some peace, because I mean, a lot of people are hurting out there, man, you know, like it's crazy.
Let's go back to, you brought up the comments during your IG Live. Many people make it a point of not living in the comments because of all just, it's a sewer. Yeah. That's very difficult to do on an IG Live, because the whole reason you're there is for interaction, is for that immediate feedback or questions, comments, requests. How do you deal with that? And do you take some time after your live to decompress if it hits a little bit too hard?
Yeah. I mean, I'll be honest and say, like, when I first started doing it, of course, you know, you get some people on there who really like literally live to like go on live stream because they feel safe. They're behind a computer. Nobody can, you know, get them, and they can just bully you. And they live for that, a lot of them. And the first couple times I experienced, you know, some people who are like being really intense, I was like, okay, I had to talk to my management. I'm like, okay, like, how should I approach this? And, you know, we had a discussion about it. And now that I've been doing it, you know, for months, it's one of those things like, you know, you learn as you go. And I also realize that the way I react is also teaching my audience how to react, because everybody, you know, not even just in the music business. I mean, if you're a kid in school, most likely you're going to experience a form of bullying. So they're kind of looking at me like, okay, how is she going to respond to this? And one of the things that I tried to remind my audience is that, hey, you know, hurt people, you know, if somebody is coming on here and they're spewing negative things, these people are actually the people I hope the most actually watch my live and right. go, oh, and get something good out of it, because they're obviously going through something, because no healthy, happy person spends their time trying to bring other people down. So I'll make comments about that sometimes. And it's really funny because I have a mantra in the live stream and a
give
lot
it to
of
me. Let's hear it. I know it. I know it. We might even be able to say it together. If you hate me, I love you. If you love me, I love you even more.
And if you rock with me, I rock with you.
That part I don't know, but that's okay. That's okay.
But just as a reminder to have a good time. And, you know, it's really cute because sometimes when people come on there and they start saying something ugly, like I'll see like my core followers be like, hey, like mantra, let's say the mantra. And it's so, you want to know the funniest part, Aaron, is that it's really cool because I'd say 8 to 9 out of 10 times, most of these people who go on there to troll are used to getting a reaction out of the person where they're like, oh, well, screw you too. You know, like, I don't like you either. And in my life, I have actually dealt with, you know, a couple times, some narcissistic personalities. And something that I learned from that was that a lot of people who, you know, spew something that's kind of like an attack is that they live for your reaction. Like they literally, if you don't give them a reaction or that it bothers you or the reaction they're expecting you to have, it confuses them. First of all, it becomes boring for them. So they're like, oh, well, if it's not going to make you upset, then that's boring, you
right,
know?
Right.
And two, you know, one of the things I do is like when they write something ugly, I'll read their username and I'll be like, love you too, babe. Love you too. And it's so funny, Aaron, because, you know, 8 to 9 out of 10 times, those people are so confused by my response. They're like, what do you mean? I just told you suck. Why are you telling me you love me? And I'm like, it's okay. I said, you know, the other night I said on there, if you want to vent and you're going through something, I'm actually happy that I'm the person you're venting at, because I can handle it. You know, if you were to do that to some other people, I don't know if the other person can handle it, but my hope is that you'll have a change of heart. You'll see that, like, I'm trying to show you some love and that you'll just hang out with us. Good vibes only. And it's so crazy because you'll literally watch people go from ugly to at the end of the live stream, be like, oh my gosh, I love you so much. And that, it to me is like, yes, you know, it's like such a win, because that's literally one of the reasons I do this is because I'm so passionate about mental health. And I say to those people, you know, like, I welcome you with open arms. If you get out of control with the comments, unfortunately, I will have to remove you, but I want you here. I want you to stay. I can handle those comments, but, you know, like, just, you know, take a minute, take a beat and just vibe with us and see how you feel. And it's so crazy because so many times they're like, you know what? I actually feel a lot better. I love your live stream. I'm coming back tomorrow.
Yeah, because sometimes the timing of your live stream is great, because my daughter's bedtime, they're 6 and 8. My daughter's bedtime is 8 o'clock. So many times while they're getting ready or whatever, I'll have the live stream on as they're brushing their teeth and they're getting ready and things like that. And it's like you said, it's family friendly. But sometimes I will have to kind of hold the phone a little bit to where my thumb is over the comments, because somebody might get out of control and they both can read. And they can both read very quickly too, and so it's not, there's no like, what does this mean when they say, okay, no, maybe we'll just, and one thing I like about TikTok, is that you can swipe the comments away, and you can just watch the screen, and I wish IG would implement that so that I could just watch the stream.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. First of all, I'm so happy that you watch the live stream sometimes with your daughters. That like warms my heart. And yeah, I mean, if somebody gets like really out of control, I'll give them a warning like, hey,
right. Right.
If you write that again, I'm going to have to remove you. But it's also one of those things where I don't want to waste too much time removing people, because that also takes away from the enjoyment of the show. Because I have to go in there and, like, you know, delete them. And, you know, so hopefully Instagram will implement that eventually. That'd be cool.
Awesome. Yeah, that'd be great. You've brought up several times about your being a mental health advocate. And if anybody goes to any of your social media, and most of which, if not all, are at Destiny Malibu, it's right there in your bio. It's singer, songwriter, mental health advocate. When did that become such a prominent part of your life and your identity and your brand that you said, you know what, I'm going to put it front and center?
Yeah. So, you know, I've always been passionate about mental health. You know, I have family members who have suffered from depression long-term. I've lost friends to addiction and suicidal depression. And so it's always been something that I have been extremely passionate about discussing, you know, especially when you lose somebody that you love. It's like, you know, you can't help but think like, man, what if I would have done this, or I would have done this differently, you know? So I started reading a lot about mental health. And of course, I've had my own struggles too. And, you know, my brand being family friendly and being uplifting for the most part and encouraging, you know, it's really the main reason I do music. You know, I don't get up on stage because I want people to look at me. I get up on stage because I love making people smile. I love helping people temporarily be able to maybe not think about their problems for a second, or find some relief or some solace in listening to the music. So I just realized, especially after 2018, when our house burned down and, you know, I went through some emotional ups and downs, I recorded my album Out of the Shadows, and I didn't really feel it was appropriate for me to say, oh, I'm a mental health advocate, without having anything to really like show, like, what are you doing? Right. And so I recorded that album with the intention of it helping people through hard times. I mean, I have a song on there called RIP, which I believe you have listened to.
Yeah.
And I have a song on there called Temptations. That's all about struggle with addiction. And I have a song on there called Silver Lining that helps you to, you know, get past bullying and look at the silver lining in life. And when I was on my high school and college tour, in addition to my house burning down and stuff, and I was on my high school and college tour, I realized how big of a need there was for more voices and influencers advocating for mental health. Because, you know, you'd think that, oh, these kids are in high school or something, they're not, you know, suffering from suicidal depression as much as, you know, you think an adult, because they're kids, you know, they're innocent. And it was crazy because I would go to these schools, and I'm serious, like almost every single school I went to, the administration would be like, hey, just want to let you know the kids are kind of sad today because so-and-so passed away and, you know, they committed suicide in the school. And it was just like crazy to me, because I was like, what? Like, it wasn't like it was just one school. It was like almost every single one, there had been a suicide recently. And that really spoke volumes to me about the need in the youth for influencers and media personalities to talk more about mental health and be vulnerable. You know, my management for a while was like, you know, I don't know if we should tell people that you suffered from depression, because we don't want you to have this stigma of like, oh, you know, you have issues or something. And, you know, that was something that we talked about. And I said, you know what? I don't even care. I don't even care what they think of me. I'm human, and I want to talk to the kids about this. I'm in a really, really healthy emotional space, but, you know, that's something that I can talk to the kids about, you know, how I have overcome it, or, you know, gone through the ups and downs and how I deal with it. And I think that it's also feels more genuine knowing that I went through it too. It's not like I'm just like pointing my finger at them and being like, oh, this is what you got to do. I've never experienced it, but you know what I mean? Like,
right.
You know, so it's really, really been interesting to talk to college kids and high school kids about their struggles. And then now, once I was able to record my Out of the Shadows album, I actually had something that I could say, here, check this out. You know, I hope this helps you through your hard time. So once I had that album out, I felt like, hey, now I can really come out and say I'm a mental health advocate and talk about this more and share this with the kids. And my only hope is that it moves them in some way.
Where does American Idol fit in with, was it before Borderline and Woolsey or after?
It was March 2018. So it was a little bit before everything.
So that's a roller coaster year.
Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, yeah.
What do you take away from that? Because you have this amazing experience being on American Idol. And like you said, you didn't win, but you at least got to experience that. That's huge. Yeah. And the year ends with such devastation.
Right. Yeah, you know, I want to say that 2018 was probably the most difficult year of my life in so many ways. I mean, not to tap into my personal life because I don't like to, but I was in a really, really awful relationship, like very toxic, horrible relationship. I was on, you know, I had the American Idol filming and, you know, and then all of that trauma had happened. So it definitely was just like, I was exhausted. You know, by the end of that year, I was like, I can't even move. And I was having some health issues. I had to like redo everything that I ate because I don't know if it was just from stress or whatever, but like I just felt like my body was just like shutting down. Like it was a really hard year. And when I look back on that, I mean, the number one thing that I'm thankful for is that, you know, you can, even though it's sad that we lost our house and everything, I mean, physical stuff can be replaced, but, you know, lives can't. So knowing just that my sister wasn't one of the 12 victims that passed away at the shooting, I just look back on that with pain and gratitude. So much pain for the people that were victims and people we knew, and then so much gratitude that I still have my sister. And it was just a reminder that, you know, hold on to the people you love, because even when you have those ups and downs, I mean, the number one thing to cherish is those moments with your loved ones. So that's what I try to focus on, despite all of the bad memories mixed in, you know?
What are you most proud of right now in your life?
What am I most proud of? You mean like personally or in my career?
Dealer's choice.
Dealer's choice. I mean, I am happy to say that I feel the most emotionally, spiritually, physically sound than I've ever been in my whole life. You know, it's funny because sometimes I feel like people will say, oh, I wish I could be like 18. And in my 20s, I'm like, no, I don't want to go back to 18.
Like, 18 was so awkward. Stop it.
Yeah, 18 was awkward for me. And, you know, just learning about how to love myself and all of that, those different things. And today in my 20s, I'm really thankful that I'm at where I'm at, that I've, you know, gotten a handle on my emotions, and I just feel like I'm in a really good place. I'm really proud of myself because looking back, I don't think that I would have imagined looking into the future that I would be as like emotionally and spiritually stable and happy as I am today. So that's what I want to hopefully give to these kids, you know, who are 18, who are watching me, who are going through that journey that we all go through. And I hope that they can, you know, see like, hey, you know, Destiny, she made it to the other side. Like she's good. And I hope that I can get there too, as I'm struggling with these ups and downs.
Destiny, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I really appreciate you gave me an hour today, and you're amazing. Thank you so much for this.
Thank you so much, Aaron. I had a blast. You're incredible. I'm a big fan too. And thank you so much for, you know, sharing my live stream with your daughters. And I truly send you my deepest condolences about your wife. I mean,
thank you.
That is, you know, life is so fragile. And it's these moments where we get to, you know, as personalities, talk about life and talk about something uplifting that makes everything so worthwhile. And I'm just so thankful for you and all that you do. So thank you for having me on your show.
You can connect with Destiny at DestinyMalibu.com, and she's at DestinyMalibu on most social media. All her links are in the show notes. All my links are at AaronBender.com. Would appreciate it if you subscribe to the podcast, rate, review, share. If you have guest ideas or comments, email me, AaronBenderMedia@gmail.com. Be well, and thanks for listening.